Baruchim Abayim Rabotai. Welcome to another edition of our Thursday night class. We are studying tonight Parashat Tesaveh. Again, not from the easier Parashiyot, a Parashat that's devoted to the Keleh HaMikdash, Keleh HaMishkan, the different vestments, the garments of the Kohanim, the Mizbahot, the altars, and all the precious stones that the Kohen Gadol wore on his Hoshin, on the breastplate, all topics that are more than meets the eye, like every Pasuk in the Torah, but these Pasukim especially are laden with depth and with mysticism behind it. Obviously, the Mishkan is a very mystical situation, and therefore these parashiot are not so easy to expound on. Usually, Parashat Tetzaveh comes together with Parashat Terumah. Terumah Tetzaveh. So the speaker usually is able to bypass Parashat Tetzaveh because usually you have a double header. Here we have no choice. Usually when Parashat Tetzaveh comes alone, it's during a leap year. So that means we're still a month away from Purim, so you can't even digress to Purim subjects. So we're locked in that we have no other choice but to try to find some ideas, relevant ideas that we can relay from the Parasha. Chas v'shalom, it's not that the Torah is lacking. The Torah is filled with limitless, infinite ideas. It's that the speaker is limited in trying to draw these ideas out. Chas v'shalom, it's the chesaron is in me, not in the book. Ve'asita b'gdei kodesh le'aharon achicha lechavod u'tefaret. We learn about the clothes of the Kohanim. Kohen Gadol would wear 8 clothes. And the Torah lists them for us. The Kohen Hidyot, the common Kohen, would wear 4 garments. And the Torah lists those as well. The clothes of the Kohen Gadol had different significance. Besides the fact that they covered his body, they covered his nakedness in order that he should not be ashamed. That's what all garments do. The function of all begadim is to cover oneself. That's why in Hebrew the word for a garment is a malbush, a levush. Levush comes from 2 Hebrew words, lo busha. There is no shame. Because when a person is dressed, he has no shame, he's not embarrassed anymore. It's also called begad. Beged can come from the Hebrew word to rebel, libgod, bagadnu, because many times the way a person dresses, or the way a person doesn't dress as he should, so that shows a rebellious nature. You could tell the attitude of a person through the way he dresses. But these clothes not only had a covering aspect element to them, but the Gemara tells us that these garments also atoned for different sins. For example, the me'il, the coat that the Kohen Gadol wore, atoned for sins of Lashon Hara. Which means if there were people that were gossipers, or people that were talebearers amongst our people, then the fact that the Kohen would put on the me'il, that coat somehow would have an ability to serve as a kapara, an atonement for those sins. The seats was the headband, so to speak, the plate that the Kohen would wear above his forehead. That would atone for sins of brazenness, azut mesach, for arrogance. The mechnasayim, the pants that he would wear, would atone for gilui arayot, would atone for sins of arayot, of immorality, etc. The ketonet, for shefichut damim, for murder. And that's why these were not just regular clothes. We put on our jacket, it doesn't have kapara for anything. It doesn't have any atonement for any sins. Here the Kohen Gadol, just by getting dressed in the morning, already Klal Yisrael is better because he wore these garments. That's why they had to be fashioned by tzaddikim. These were not designer clothing. This was not by some designer from Paris that came along and made the abnet or the mitznefet for the Kohen Gadol. This would not have the kiddushah to it. You know, Giorgio Zafrani and all these other designers that we say could not have fashioned these begadim. They have to be made by tzaddikim, by hachamim, and even Aharon, the first time he got dressed, he wasn't able to dress himself the first time. The Torah says Moshe dressed him because it needed to have that endowment of Kiddushah in it. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to instill in them his greatness in order that when Aharon wears them for the first time, they're inaugurated, and they'll have the ability not only to cover the nakedness of Aharon, but to cover the nakedness of our nation. Which means by him wearing these begadim, the sins of our people were atoned. Ashrei ha'am shekach lo, ashrei ha'am she'adonai Elohav. Fortunate, such a nation that has such a God that gives us such opportunities, that gave us a great chance for us to be atoned in such a magnificent way by the Kohen Gadol wearing his garments. But there's another law surrounding the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, which at first glance might sound a little vain, but it's the halakha nonetheless. And it comes from Harambam. And I quote, the Rambam is found in the 8th chapter of Hilchot Kli Mikdash. He says, Bigdei kehuna mitzvatan shiyu hadashim na'im kederech bigdei ha-gedolim shene'emar lechabod ul-tif'aret. The clothes of the Kohanim must be glorified. They must be beautiful. They must be new. The Kohen must always wear new clothes. To the extent that Rambam writes, Hayu metushtashin o mekura'in, if there was a rip, or there was a stain, or they started to wear out, or aruchin yoter al middato, or they were a little long. You know, the tailor didn't make the proper measurements. He wasn't fitted correctly. So the Kohen wore it, so he needed to, you know, make a little adjustments because it didn't fit him perfectly. And Rambam writes, oh, ketzarim pachot min midato, or they were short. Yeah, the Kohen Gadol gained some weight, and all of a sudden the clothes didn't fit him. Oh, shesilkan be'avnet ve'avad avodato pesula. In any of these cases, whatever he did during that situation, any service that he did when the clothes were not perfect, the service is rendered pasul. It's illegitimate service. It doesn't count. Why? Because the clothes were too short. Hidush. Go tell this to a rabbi, you know, when he makes a speech, that his speech doesn't count if his pants are too short. Or, you know, he read the Sefer Torah in the Kahal, and he has a stain on his shirt from the Fasulia from Friday night. So you say, oh, there's a stain on his shirt, and the Sefer Torah doesn't count. Do over, repeat. Harambam's telling you the Kohen Gadol had to dress impeccably. It's an amazing thing. We're so trained to believe that there's a contradiction between impeccable dress and religious Jews, so that we're shocked. So what are you talking about? religious Jews are able to be neat? What do you mean? There's an imperative for a Kohen Gadol to be presentable? So much so that you're telling me that if he has a little rip in his garments, okay, big deal. No. Trade him in. Get a new beged. So we're shocked when we read such a thing. Harabam continues. Kol beged mebegdei keuna shena'asu tso'in. If they got dirty, so what would we say? They got dirty. Oh, don't wear them when they're dirty. Send them to the dry cleaners. And then wear a new set, and then you have two pairs now when it comes back from the cleaners. And Rambam says, "En melabenin otan, ve'en mechabesim otam." You don't send the clothes of the Kohanim to the cleaners, because once already you clean them once, they lose their shine, they lose their whiteness. It's never the same. A new suit straight from the tailor is never the same once you send it to the cleaners once. So Rambam says, what do you do with it? He says, rip it up and make wicks for the menorah. So from the pants of the Kohen that he wore once or twice, now they become stained. So take them up, fashion them into a petilah, so your recycling program. But the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, Rambam writes, gonzim otam. You put them in ginizah. Which means you're not even allowed to reuse them. Incidentally, they had a specific office on the Temple Mount. It was called Lishkat Pinhas HaMalbish. And in this office, they had the garments, and they had the tailor over there, and they had the storage. So whenever the Kohanim needed to get dressed, they would go to that office. So they're making a big deal of these clothes. And Harambam says the source, Lechabod, Ultif'aret. Again, for kavod, for honor, and for glory. The Kohen must look dignified. He must look, as I said, impeccably clean, without any crease even, to the extent there's a halakha that says, and we say this on Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would dip in the mikveh 5 times. And it says in the halakha, he would go down to the mikveh, yarad v'taval, he would go down and dip, ve'ala, and he would come out, v'nistapag. What does v'nistapag mean? He would dry himself. And if he dries himself, he puts on his garments. So the Mefarshim asked, the Mishneh Lamelech, he says, what do you have to tell me? He dries himself. Of course, that's obvious. A guy comes out of the shower. You come out of the mikveh. I would think he's not going to dry himself. You want to tell me he has to go into the mikveh? That's a deen. But what do you have to do? Benistapag. As if it's a deen, he must dry himself. He'll dry himself. So the Mishneh Lamelech wants to learn, no, it's a deen. Because if he doesn't dry himself, the water is an interference to the clothes. The clothes must be on his body. And therefore, it's not that if he wants to dry or not. He must dry himself. So the clothes are flush on his skin without any hatzitza. Comes a rabbi called the Meshech Chokmah. And he says, I'll tell you why he has to dry himself. You know why? Because what happens to the clothes if you put them on a wet body? So they become all water stained, and they become crinkled, and they become creased, and the whiteness starts to dull, and therefore it doesn't look good. Therefore the Torah demands, make sure you dry yourself good. Why? Because of the clothes. Because we don't want the clothes to be compromised, or to lose their look. I think this is a very interesting lesson that we could learn from this. As I alluded to, we see from here, Rabotai, even though we might not be Kohanim Gedolim, nor Kohanim Hedyotim, we consider ourselves simple Jews. But we see here that there's a requirement for a Jew to dress the role of a Jew. A Jew is not allowed to be a slob. A Jew is not allowed to say, what, clothes? Shtuyot, I'm not interested in the clothes. Torah, mitzvot, religion, I don't put an emphasis on this. And therefore, he lets himself go into the public domain unkempt and dirty and uncleaned. The Torah is telling you, our holiest men, nechabod el tefaret. Now, this does not mean, of course, that a person should go overboard and they have to dress in, you know, $3,000 suits and all sorts of fancy designer clothing. Of course, it's not the intent to preach now that everybody must be up to date in the latest fashions and the Vogue, etc. But there is something to say in the Mishnah that Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair said, cleanliness is next to godliness. And therefore, nikiyut, cleanliness in its simple understanding. It's quite embarrassing that we have to talk about such a subject, and we're not, Chas v'Shalom, referring to anybody in the audience here tonight. God bless you all, you're all beautiful people. But in general, this must be a lesson that we must teach to our children as well, that they are representing Torah, they are representing religion. And therefore, they always must look dignified, and they always must be presentable when they're out in the street, in order that they should also be the chabod u'tifaret. And don't think that I'm exaggerating. There's a sefer achinuch, Rabbi Aharon HaLevi. He goes to the mitzvot of the Torah, the 613 mitzvot, and he gives you a rationale behind the mitzvot. Why did God tell us to do a specific mitzvah? On mitzvah number 16, Tzvah number 16 is when you're eating the Korban Pesach, the sacrificial lamb on the night of the Seder. It's a big, big piece of meat that's sitting on the table. And it has bones. So the Torah tells us, Ve'etzem lo tishmeru bo. You're not allowed to break the bones. You have to carve it. You can't go to the meat and rip off a piece of bone and eat it. Why not? So he says, "Min ha'shoresh she'en kavod l'bnei melachim." It's not befitting. It's not becoming. It's not respectable for sons of God, sons of kings, princes, the yo'atzei eres, and advisors of the world. The Jew is the advisor of the world. But now you're going to start to crack a bone and suck on it like a dog. And you're going to crack the bone and start to vacuum out the marrow in the bone. It's not mechubad. What are you talking about? It's not respectful. Lo yeut la'asot kacha. Ki'im la'aniyeh ha'amar e'abim. Who does this? The poor people that have no food. But Am Yisrael is B'nei Melachim. We are royalty. We have an importance, and therefore we have to play the role. And therefore, to sit at a table and to start cutting off the bones of the Korban Pesach. In Arabic they say Aib. It's not proper. It's not becoming. Now we don't have this mitzvah anymore today. But the logic behind the mitzvah, of course, still applies. You know, there used to be an advertisement for Kentucky Fried Chicken where they said, finger licking good. This is not a Jewish concept. A guy sits at the table and after he finishes the chicken, he starts to make mitzitza on his fingers and he starts to, you know, he's enjoying all to the last drop. It's not mechubad for a person to start to sit at the table in a gluttonous fashion. But that's the exact same concept, even though he made a beracha, even though he's eating glad kosher food, and it's Bet Yosef, and it's Yashan, and it's all the other thing, no bugs, to add all the tariyag mitzvot. But if you're eating like a slob, so then you miss this over here. So you miss the underpinnings of this mitzvah. And that's what the Torah is telling us over here as a first lesson. This is just an appetizer, just to open up, that you see over here that Am Yisrael must be concerned the way they carry themselves. I was once privy to be with a great Gaon, the former chief rabbi of Antwerp, Rav Chaim Kreiswirth, Zichrono Levracha, passed away last year. He was a Gaon Adir, a scholar of scholars. This man knew the entire Jerusalem Talmud by heart, verbatim, word for word. And he also was fluent in the Jerusalem Talmud as well. And once, we were in a car, driving in Jerusalem, and they had the windows open. And then when we finally reached our destination, the great sage, before he got out of the car, he took out a pocket mirror out of his pocket with a little brush, and he started to comb his beard. And I was amazed. That beard, there's somebody concerned about his beard. I taught them it's wise for it to be hatemala v'sheva lemata, to have it like a lulav shenifritzu halav. And here the rabbi was concerned that the beard should be intact. And I saw exactly the way the gedolim were concerned about this. They're ambassadors of the religion. They're representing Torah. And therefore, of course, they didn't stand in front of a mirror all day long and change their suit 6 times. And they didn't go put on, makeup, and they didn't go start involving themselves in different cosmetics. But the basics, they should be presentable in front of people. They had nikiyut. It's told about Rav Ruderman, Zichrono Levracha, the former Rosh Yeshiva of the Baltimore Yeshiva. Whenever he would go away somewhere and he would get to the train station, the first thing he would do is he would take a shoe shine. He's going now out of the yeshiva, he's going to see, businessmen, whatever it was, mechubad, have to be kempt. I once saw a great gaon, Hasid, Shiba Hasidim, Rav Chaim Brim, Zichrono Levracha, who was one of the students of the Hazon Ish. We were fortunate to learn with him on Thursday nights, Mesilat Yesharim. And after one of those sessions, I asked the rabbi if I'm able to take a picture of him. I had my camera with me that night, and I had a little chutzpah maybe, and I asked the rabbi if I could take a photograph of him. In the rabbi's humility, he answered me, "They don't know me in America. You're not going to be able to sell the picture for too much money." I said, "No, Rabbi, it's not a business venture. I'm not looking to make money on your picture. I just want to have a memorabilia of the rabbi." He said, "Fine." I'm about to snap, and he says, "Wait." And he goes now, and he starts to fix his peot in order to make sure that they're straight. And he fixes his beard, and he fixes his kippah and his hat. And I'm about to snap, and he says, "Wait." And he starts to fix the table, and he moves the seltzer, and there was a bottle cap. He throws it on the side, and says, "Take the picture." And at the time, to be honest with you, I was questioning in my mind, what is he making such a big deal? If somebody would ask me to take a picture, snap. And here he's organizing and cleaning and doing, even the table. And the explanation is because this is going to be the picture. And based on the rabbi's appearance, people are going to make judgments. And therefore, they look at the tables, "Oh, look at these rabbis, there's seltzer bottle all over the place, and there's cake, and look at them." So he's careful in order to, it should be mechubad. He taught me a lesson that night. Even the great Hasidim that didn't think about their personal life for a moment, but when it came to the image that they had to portray, the fahot in front of others, they did have a concern about it. And therefore, you shouldn't say, this is, we don't pay attention to clothes in Judaism. One of the guys said, "Al tistakel bekankan ela ma sheyesh betocho." We don't look at the external in Judaism. We only look at the internal. You're right. But that doesn't mean that a person should totally neglect his external. Of course, that shouldn't be his primary focus, that he's too busy worrying about his begadim. But there is something to say, lechavod u'tefaret. It must be dignified. I will point out that Rachem Avadya Yosef has a teshuvah. in Yahveh Da'at, where he goes to great lengths to allow Jewish men to use mirrors. It's not the arena tonight to discuss the halachic size of whether it's permissible for a man to use a mirror or not. There is opinions that say it is forbidden because it's vain, it's feminine, and a man cannot be acting like a lady. Even though many men today don't follow that halakha either. In any event, we do see that the Hakam in his conclusion says it's incumbent, especially upon the religious men, to use a mirror from time to time in order that they should be presentable and clean because they are representing Klal Yisrael. Again, not that it should be our primary involvement, but a person also has to recognize that people are watching us, and not only that, but for our own dignity, for our own personal self-respect, they call it. Person has to be dignified, etc. Ve'asita bigdei kodesh le'aron achicha le'chabod ultefaret. Besides the atonement factor, besides the fact that there had to be glorious clothes, meaning clean and impeccable, but Achamim say, lechavod, lechavod, which means when a person dresses in a certain way, that reminds the person who's wearing it his special position. And the Torah wants Aharon and his sons to remember who they are because the clothes make the man. Which means based on the way a person dresses, that already holds him in a certain esteem. Not to others, to himself. When a doctor is wearing his white robe, he's obligated to have a certain manner. He's obligated to have a certain professionalism. Why? Because of the white robe that he's wearing. That demands from him a certain level of formality. And the officer that's wearing his hat and his uniform, the uniform elevates the person. And therefore it brings him to a certain standard of decency that he must have, that he might not have to have when he takes off his hat and his uniform. And therefore, the same would apply to any of the uniforms in the world. It's to remind the wearer his position in life. I'd like to comment, if I may, that if we're on this subject of clothes, we see that in every industry there is a certain uniform that is worn. Even the baseball players, each team has their own uniform. But even more significant, each industry has their own hat. The Yankees have their classic blue hat with the NY interlocking symbol. You have the postman that has his hat. And if anybody ever rode the transit, the conductor has yet another hat. A funny hat, albeit, but a hat nonetheless. Jews have different hats as well. The Hasidim, for example, they have what they call a strimel that they wear. The strimel is like a fur hat that they wear on Shabbat or on holidays. Where did the strimel come from? It didn't start by Jews. Actually, the strimel was imposed on Jews by anti-Semitic Eastern European Gentiles, which means they wanted to segregate us and separate us. So they made the Jews of Eastern Europe wear where this strimal, this furry hat. Otherwise, what do you mean? That somebody's going to come up with this idea to put a beaver on his head all of a sudden? Who's going to come up with such an idea? It was the Goyim. In order to ridicule us, in order to mock us, they told us that, what? You have to wear this. And then the Jews, in typical Jewish fashion, they turned the hat that was supposed to be a sign of derision, they turned it into a sign of prestige and Jewish pride. Oh, they're telling us that we're different? Yes, this is our sign of dignity now. Yes, that we're not like them. And then the hat became now a status symbol to show that they're not like everybody else. That's the greatness of the Jews. The Goyim tried to do it to bring us down. On the contrary, it only gave us more Jewish pride. The same thing might be said with those that wear the black hat. The famous black hat. It's almost a dirty word in some sects. Again, it's another sign of association with a certain group. It's no different than the hats that they wear in the army or on the baseball diamond. It's a hat that just associates people with a more religious group. Does that mean if somebody doesn't wear a hat, he's not religious? Of course not. Just like if a baseball player doesn't wear his hat, doesn't mean that he can't hit a baseball. It's just a siman. It's just a signal who he associates with. Unfortunately, people take it so out of context. And they think that the hat represents all sorts of things that it was never intended to mean. They say, what do they want to wear it for him? Guy watches football every Sunday. To me, a football helmet is much more evasive than it is in black hat. But then they come along and say, but that wasn't the custom. We never wore black hats. I'm assuming the people that say this are people that follow all our customs. I'm sure these people are, loyalists to all the minhagim, and therefore they feel the right that they have to come along and preserve this custom as well, that we never wore the black hat. So the answer to that is, you're right, it wasn't the custom, so we should all go back to wearing the fez cap. I don't know if many years ago in the old country we wore three-button suits. Or did we have pleated trousers? In the old country, they wore the jalabiya, they wore the jibbeh, the barneta, they had different garments. So you want to go back to that? We can go back to that also. So fashions change. Hats change. It's not the most important thing. Unfortunately, these people give it more importance than it deserves. And therefore, they get all bent out of shape. You're right, it's not so important. One rabbi said, it's not the hat per se, it's what's under the hat. Oh, it's the head, that's the main thing. We agree with that. Somebody once commented to a rabbi who was beardless. Said, oh, what kind of rabbi is this without a beard? So the rabbi told him, oh, you want to study from a beard? So you can go to the barn and learn from a goat. Goat also has a beard. That's what became your limud now, from whiskers coming from off a fellow's face. That became your. Now, of course, if a person has a beard, it's beautiful. Matovu manaim. It's beautiful. It's dignified. It's hashuv. But to come along and make from anything like that, over prioritize it. Of course, that's not the. On both sides of the coin. Yes, he has it, God bless you. It doesn't have it, God bless you. You want to wear it, beautiful. You don't know. But people overemphasize these things, and then it makes it a sore point. What I really wanted to discuss, however, with the close of the Kohen Gadol, it's interesting, the Kohen Gadol wore a, if I'm not mistaken, a very tall hat, and it was a white hat. Oh, so now you have a victory for the white hats out there. Yeah, the Kohen Gadol was a white hat. It wasn't a black hat. So there you go. In any event, what does it mean that the person should wear clothes lechavod? Aren't we anti-kavod? Again, this is one of these misconceptions. What do you mean, kavod? Kavod's a taboo word in Judaism. Right? We're not allowed to have kavod. What, that the guy should know how great he is? On the contrary, we should tell the Kohen Gadol to dress in a potato sack. But to come along, no, we want you to dress because you're a hashuv man. Dress your part, lechavod, self-respect. What happened to humility? Don't the rabbis always preach, you have to be humble, you have to be humble. And now they tell you, Kohen, chief rabbi, make sure you wear the robe, wear the turban. Why? Lechavod. So therefore you remember your great stature. Remember your great stature? I thought everybody's supposed to believe that they're nothing, that they're zero, and there's no such thing as a great Jew. Only God is great. People are supposed to be low. People are supposed to be self-effaced. The Jew is supposed to be humble. He's not supposed to have any good feelings about himself. How do we understand self-esteem versus humility? How do we understand lechavod ul-tifaret and anava? I think this is the most important point that we all must remember. There is a great difference between healthy self-esteem and humility. It is possible to have both simultaneously. What is self-esteem and what is humility? I'll explain. Rabotai, everybody has to know their value. Everybody has to know their greatness. Everybody has to recognize their potential. And everybody must feel good that they have great potential and that they have the ability to achieve amazing things. And yes, you have an obligation to know that God gave you a neshama that is a piece of Himself. Chelek Elokam Mimal. And that is supposed to give you a good feeling about yourself. And that you should hold yourself in high esteem. There's no question about it. How do I know this? I'll tell you how I know this. Who was the most humble of men? Moshe Rabbeinu. How do we know he was the most humble of men? It's written in the Torah. Va'ish Moshe Anav Me'od. Oh, can I ask you a question? Who wrote that pasuk? Oh, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote that pasuk, and Moshe was the most humble man ever to live. Now, I'm not saying that he wrote it excitingly, or, you know, he couldn't wait to write it, or that was his favorite pasuk, but he wrote it. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu understands that you could be great and humble at the same time. Humility means once you realize the greatness that you have and the talents that God gave you and the gifts that He gave you, the humble man says, not look what I did, but look what I have to do. Look at my obligations. If somebody else would have these talents that I have, maybe he would be better than me. This is not from me. The humble man recognizes that all the different strengths that God gave him cause him to do and achieve and accomplish and move forward and create. That's humility. Humility is, I'm not doing enough. When somebody says, wow, you're the best. Best. What best? There's so much more that I have to accomplish. There's so much more that's left undone. That's proper humility. At the same time, recognizing the greatness of a man. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu could write. Yes, the fact is, that's a fact. I am the most humble man. But so what? That still obligates him to do much more. And therefore he didn't rest on his laurels. There was a rabbi called Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Alav Shalom. He was scheduled for a procedure in his heart. Might have been a pacemaker. He asked for a few days to think about it. After he deliberated back and forth, he allowed them to operate. When they asked him, Hakam, what's the deliberation here? Was it a medical concern? Was it a religious concern? He said, well, my assumption is that when Mashiach comes, they're going to reinstate the Sanhedrin. And I assume that I will be a member of the Sanhedrin. And the Rambam writes that the members of the Sanhedrin cannot have any mumim. They cannot have any physical blemishes. So I needed to analyze if the pacemaker is going to cause me to be a Baal Mum and therefore render me disqualified from sitting on the Sanhedrin. This was the one of the most humble men that ever lived in our generation, Rabbi Feinstein. But at the same time, he knew his greatness. Humility doesn't mean to walk around and say, I stink, I'm nothing, I'm zero, I'm garbage, I have no value. That's foolishness. Humility is to know what exactly your talents are and not to be boastful of them. But after a person recognizes the power and strength of the human being, then the humble man says, how much more am I obligated? How much more must I do? Not how much did I accomplish already. Hence there is no contradiction. There's an interesting midrash. Midrash says, Kedoshim tihiyu. As Jews, we have an obligation to be holy. So the Midrash asks the question, Yachol kamoni? Do you think it's possible for you to become as holy as God? Midrash answers, no, Talmud lomar, ani Hashem. You can't be as holy as God. What is this Midrash telling us? Did anybody ever think that they could become as holy as God, that we need a midrash to tell us you can't be as holy as God? Who ever thought that? If I would tell you, Rabotai, you have to be holy, somebody would ask me, what do you mean? Like God? You're not going to ask such a question. Who even, it's not a havamina, it doesn't enter your mind. But the midrash comes along and says, oh, don't make a mistake. There's only one God. You're not God. You know what we see from this midrash? That if a person really understood the potential of human beings, and if he understood what the power of his neshama is, and if he really understood how much potential lies in every human being, he can come to make the mistake and say, yeah, should I be holy like God? No, relax, you're great, but you're not that great. From the question and answer of the midrash, it shows you the value that they placed on every human being. Adam HaRishon, the angels thought he was Hashem. They stood in front of Adam and they said, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. He said, no, I'm not God. I'm only Adam. That was before the sin, of course. After the sin, he fell from his level. But still, the power of Adam was great. I agree, an angel will not misinterpret us as God. We hope that they'll recognize us as Jews. But the point is, that's how great we are. That even an angel can make a mistake and think Adam is God. And you have to know that. That's self-esteem. That takes you out of all your depressions. You have to know you're great. And if a person has to dress to remind him that he's great, so be it. You cannot forget that. But once the Kohen Gadol puts on those garments, what's the next thing he thinks? What are my responsibilities? If God is letting me wear these great clothes, what do I have to do now? My concentration, my preparation, my service, my devotion. Hence we see self-esteem and humility hand in hand. The Ha'ish Moshe Anav. What does Ish mean? Important man. Ish is Hashuv. Interesting. At the same time, the Moshe was Anav, he was also an Ish. It doesn't say Moshe Anav, the Ha'ish Moshe. He knew he was an Ish, but he was at the same time Anav. What a lesson. There's such a misconception on this. People think, you know, how to feel good about yourself. It's a contradiction to humility. Furthest thing from the truth. And I'd like to tell you over in Dirasha that I heard yesterday on this concept from this Perasha as well. Do you know the oil that they used for the menorah was oil that was from the first press of the olives? They would crush the olive, and the first oil that comes out, they call that katit lamaor. The crushing, the first crushing for the menorah. Katit lamaor, this week's parashah. However, oil was also used in the meal offerings, in the menachot. When it comes to the meal offerings, the oil doesn't have to be first press. It can be even the second press. So the way the Gemara says, katit lamaor, velo katit lemenachot. You don't need first crushing for the menachot, for the meal offerings. So I heard that the Darsharim said like this. Katit means crushing. Maor means to illuminate. Menachot could mean a meal offering, and it can also come from the word mencha, which is a gift, but can also come from the word nachat, which is low, lowliness. Nach is something that's low. Nacha, it's down. It's lowly. And maybe the rabbis were hinting. Katit. Yes, a person has to be crushed. Crush himself, humility. But what must be the outcome? Lama'or. Yes, it's crushing, but to illuminate. Humility must lead a person into construction, into doing things. Velo katit. And not crushing that leads to menachot, that leads to lowliness, that leads to inaction. That leads to depression. That type of katit is asur. Yes, katit lamaor, velo katit lemenachot. But not a crushing that leads to a person denying his talents. If a person is smart, he shouldn't say, I'm dull. If a person is strong, he shouldn't fool himself in saying he's weak. Person is not allowed to live in self-delusion. He must know who he is. Because then he can begin to grow and he can be successful. But if he fools himself into thinking, yes, I'm a humble man, I'm nothing. Then in 120 years he will live out that dream and he will die a nothing. Because he fooled himself into thinking that.
Rav Moshe knew he was worthy to sit on the Sanhedrin. And the Midrash had a hava mina to think that we could become holy like God. And the angels misinterpreted Adam to be God. And we're walking around saying, oh, I'm nothing. That's a lie. We're great. Once you know how great you are, now you can begin humility. Our tradition tells us the Torah was given on Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, which was from the lowly mountains. There were much more majestic mountains like Mount Tabor, Mount Carmel, Mount Hermon, all in the same region. But God chose the more humble of the mountains, Har Sinai. So somebody asked, if God was trying to teach us a lesson in humility, why give it on a mountain at all? Give it in the plains. Give it in the Grand Canyon. It's underground. It's in the depths. That'll really show me humility. And the explanation is, no. Humility is not somebody that says, I'm a nothing, I'm underground, I'm subterranean. The humble man also can be a har. He can also know that he's a mountain. He also has to recognize his talents and the wealth of potential that lies within him. Yes, he has to know that he is a har as well. That's katit la maor. Yes, crush yourself in humility, but to illuminate. But not Leminachot. There was one rabbi, Rabbi Yehezkel Abramsky, who was once in a secular court in London. The judge told him, is it true that you are the chief rabbi of London, an expert in Talmud, the foremost halakhic authority of the generation? Rabbi Yehezkel Abramsky confidently answered, yes, indeed. And the judge said, Rabbi, I'm shocked. You answer such an answer. What happened to humility? And he says, I'm under oath. These rabbis understood what they were, but they didn't go around boasting it. They didn't go around with a placard saying who they were. But they knew they knew their level. And that only inspired them to do more. And that felt, that made themselves feel that they have much more to go. And that's the lechamodul tefaret. Yes, it's okay if a person has self-respect. It's okay for a person to feel that he has strengths and talents and he's good at something. You know, a Jew doesn't have to walk around and say, I'm not good at anything. That's not humility. That's stupidity. That's a lie. Oh, anava begins once a person knows how great he is. But before you know how great you are, how could you be humble? First you have to be an ish, then you could be an anav. And that's what the Torah is telling you. Va'asita bigdei kodesh l'Aaron ha'aicha lechabod ultefaret. Yes, Aaron had to know his supreme being and power over everybody else. Because when he walked into the Beit HaMikdash, we didn't want him to forget. We wanted him to see the big belt around his chest. We wanted him to feel the tall hat above him and see the glistening stones. So he'll always be reminded, I'm the Kohen Gadol. I'm the most Hashuv Lechabod. In order that he'll rise to the occasion and serve Klal Yisrael dutifully and loyally. And that's our mission as well, Rabotai. Of course, we must not be arrogant, we must not boast, but we also must not fool ourselves. The Gemara says, and I'll conclude with this, One of the rabbis went up to heaven after 120. And he saw the system of Olam HaEmet, of the world of truth, and he reported it back down to some of his relatives that were still alive. And they asked him, what did you see? And he says, I saw Olam Hafuch. I saw a topsy-turvy world. Elyonim lemata v'tachtonim lemala. I saw people that were great in this world. Over there, they were low. And I saw people that were low in this world. And over there, they were great. Olam Hafuch. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta explained. Who's this Gemara talking? It's talking about two different people that both study Torah. One studies 100 pages of Gemara a year. Oh, 100 pages a year. He's Elyon, Azul. And the other guy only can study 3 pages. A Ma'aris. He's Tahton. But then in the world to come, that guy that was Elyon, could be he'll be Tahton, he'll be low. And the guy that was low will be high. Why? Because they're going to say, yes, you learned 100. But you had the ability to learn 500. But because you had arrogance, you walked around saying, oh, look at this, I do 100. Oh, look at me. And everybody said, yes, look at him, he's great. And the problem is with you, you believe them. When they told you you're great, you fell for that. And therefore you rested. And therefore 100, you could have done 500. They put him in the back. But this fellow over here, he did 3. And that's what he was able to do, 3, because that was his potential. And therefore, arrogance thwarts a person. It stifles him. The arrogance causes a person to be complacent and happy. And therefore, he says, what do I have to do more for? I'm good. The humble man always says, if I was able to do 100, maybe I'm able to do 200. Maybe my potential is not being used to the fullest. That is the true anava that God wants from us. So yes, indeed, lechabod u'tefaret, and anava as well. These are some of the lessons that we may draw out from the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Impeccable dress, and at the same time, humility and self-esteem. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen ve'amen. Rabbi Ananya ben Kasha amen. Sorry, Baruch Hu Zikot Yisrael. Nefika, Kerman Adot Shemar. Hafez, Masikot, Torah ve'yadir.